Algar Productions.
This is the Post-Atomic Horror, the most comprehensive Star Trek podcast ever produced. Your hosts are Ron Algar Watt and Maggie Robotham. Episode 538, A Space Adventure Hour.
Hi, friends. Welcome to the Post-Atomic Horror. I'm Al.
I'm Maggie.
And I forget how to do this. We
it's been
a couple of weeks off, and I'm like, wait, what is this show? What do we do? Who are you?
It's been 2 weeks. I went to Canada. I looked at an aquarium. Fucking, I don't know how to make podcasts anymore.
Well, I mean, you just say stuff. I make the podcasts.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
I can't make them without you, to be clear, but but I do make them.
Al banging away in the old podcast factory, turning the podcast crank.
Mm-hmm. I guess we're making podcasts now.
Time to make the podcasts.
Oh, no, we don't.
Oh, God.
Don't. We don't make that reference.
Oh, God.
You'll wake him. He stirs. Also,
I like the idea that the podcast factory is the Play-Doh fun factory.
Sometimes it's fun. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we get an episode like a space adventure out. No, I take that back.
It's not. I was expecting this to suck, especially after the opening. Well, so
yeah, the pre-credit sequence was like, oh God, are you kidding me? And then it got better. But we'll get it. Wait, why don't you just kick things off and tell us what happened?
All right. So the Enterprise has a lot going on this week as they prepare to study a gamma star and are also installing a new device on the ship called let me see if I'm reading this right here. This is a holodeck. Is that correct? A recreation room designed to holographically replicate any environment, including older, better television series. Interesting if true. Pike and Una ask La'an to give it a test run, and La'an is delighted to recreate an adventure of 60s-era detective Amelia Moon from a story she read as a kid, because characters in the future continue to only care about things from the 1900s. Whatever, it's fine. Anyway, La'an asks the computer to analyze the Amelia Moon books and create a new story that only she can solve. And, like, I know this is what the holodeck does. It's been doing that since elementary Dear Data, but it suddenly seems way too AI sloppy for me. Like, Jesus. So La'an takes the story with relish, eagerly exploring a mystery starring from Hollywood actors on a recently canceled science fiction program, which isn't too terrible until Uhura takes a full 5 minutes to talk about how important Star Trek is, and I make the wanky-wanky gesture so hard that my arm goes flying across the room and out of a window. Meanwhile, Scotty frantically runs around trying to keep the holodeck from crashing the ship's computer, like me trying to run Grim Fandango on our family PC in 1998. This almost causes the ship to crash into a star, but, you know, that happens every week. It's fine. On the holodeck, La'an brings Spock in to help her solve the case, and eventually they deduce that it's Spock. It's actually Spock, which I will admit I didn't see coming. With the case solved and the ship out of danger, La'an recommends not installing the holodeck on every ship in the fleet, just saving us all from the time that we spent in Fairhaven on Voyager, thank God.
On second thought, let's not go to the holodeck. 'Tis a silly place.
Uh-huh. You know, we could use this to replicate an Irish village. Why? Why would we do that? I don't know.
And then, in this
why
ship,
why do anything?
The ship that's stranded far from everywhere and has limited energy capabilities, we just leave it running indefinitely.
A massive power drain, as comes up many times. And as someone who's played the Voyager video game, I can confirm it is a massive power drain that takes up a whole 4 decks that I could use to put fucking crew members.
I don't even think, like, and look, we don't need to relitigate Voyager. It sucked. But, like, I don't even think it's a bad idea to have kept the holodeck to keep people sane, but Tom always left his programs going forever, and like, what are you doing, man?
Fucking just the audacity of the guy one of the guys that the captain loves, and she loves her 4 guys. God knows Harry Kim's been on the bridge as an ensign for 7 fucking years.
That's a precedent that goes back to the first guy. That's just how captains run the show.
I just fucking just like, hey, like, I know you guys really like this French bar or whatever we're into this week, but like, I got an hour and a half booked out so I can play fucking whatever I'm into this week, you know?
Yeah. Well,
sorry. Sorry. Tom said that he was going to keep the bar. You can use the bar if you want. We have a bar. With real alcohol in it, for the love of God.
It's a smaller ship, so it's like four forward, but it's, you know, it works.
You want to come into my bar? Actually, you know what? I'll go to the fucking French. Yeah, you know what? I see the issue here. Thanks, Tom.
No, you know what? Kes has set up a blanket fort. I'm just going to go hang out there.
Blanket fort sounding pretty good, actually.
Yep. So I initially was like, oh, holodeck, it's too early for that. But
yeah,
I remembered, and Memory Alpha backed me up on this, but I did remember that in the animated series, they introduced the recreation deck, which was a thing.
Yes, and they call it in this.
Yes, it's like 10 years before that, and they're testing it. And of course, yes, they would test it on the flagship. So like, I buy into the premise. And go ahead.
It makes a lot of sense to me. This is supposed to be like a reward. Like, no one's expecting this thing to fucking explode. Like,
well, and there's like four words you said there that made this episode for me, and it has since he showed up, and that is Scotty frantically runs around.
He sure does.
I love that little guy. That is, once again, I've said this several times now, perfect casting, perfect writing. For the guy we know he's going to be, just gradually learning that every captain asks for the most unreasonable shit, that the ship's about to explode if you don't push the right button, that it's about to fall into a sun if you don't stop trying to rewire things in a way that's not approved by the manual, and the captain's going to come down and say, why haven't you done this yet? Everyone's going to die, and he's developing 7 ulcers simultaneously, and I love it.
The bit in the episode where he sneaks up to the bridge as Ora. So no reason to don't freak out or anything.
Hypothetically,
it's all fine.
Asking for a friend.
Just like I was just walking down the deck and I had a thought to myself that like maybe you could help with. Everything's fine. He's dropping a metric ton of sweat off of. I was like, are you okay? Oh, sure, I'm grand.
I wanted
story,
to know
though.
about this problem my friends having. You know, it's not me. It's a different.
It's across the fleet, right? Like, not even close to. Honestly, I shouldn't even be bringing it up, but hypothetically,
I like that he goes to her because she's not an engineer, so she won't tattle to Pelia. She's got engineering training, so she can still help, but she's not in his direct chain of command. So, yeah, it's very good. I also feel like this is where they started becoming friends, which makes sense.
We should definitely at least make one of those things where if neither of us are married when we're 60, we'll just hook up.
And no one will understand where it came from. They'll be like, why are you dating?
I mean, that's the only reason I can think of for them to hook up in that movie.
Yeah, they had no like romantic chemistry.
Look, I saw your fan dance and like, do you want to give this a go? No.
I bought a boat. Do you like boats?
You like boats, right?
Who doesn't like a boat?
Yeah.
So, okay, let's talk about the thing. The thing that we both were like, oh, Christ.
Yeah.
The episode cold opens with kind of a fake out of their version of 60s Trek.
Yes. It's rough, man.
We have discussed the idea of covering other shows, Star Trek themed episodes and parodies and such. This feels like one of those, but like not one of the better ones. Like,
no,
one of the lesser SNL casts versions of it or something.
Yeah. Like, I mean, like, it just, I've seen this done a million times before. And you know what? I've seen it done better.
I've seen it done better many times.
Mm-hmm.
And that takes me to my bad thing. Once again, the guy playing Kirk, I'm not a fan of, but they have him playing fake Shatner, and he's doing the most ham-handed version of Shatner, you know, like that thing. And that is one of the worst. I've seen a lot of Shatner impressions.
Oh, yeah.
And this is one of the worst. I think I must have talked about this. One good one in all the many years I've been into this shit, and that is Kevin Pollak.
Yep.
Kevin Pollak, who managed to do all of the hacky, like, impressions that everyone did, but he did really good versions of them. He did a good Christopher Walken.
Yep.
He did a good Arnold Schwarzenegger. Like, things that everybody thinks, oh, that's a ridiculous voice. Yeah. I can do that. No, you can't. He actually sounds like the people, and it's funny. And this is not that. This is like, I watched someone else's version of Shatner, and I think I've got this. And like,
yeah, it's
you don't, buddy.
It's rough. Like, it's very much the, no, I think I can do a Shatner. Everyone can do a Shatner impression. No, buddy, you can't.
I get what they're doing with the meta thing, but Anson Mount really should have done that, because I've seen him mimic some of Shatner's mannerisms, and he fucking nails it.
Yeah.
He should have been the guy. But that said, this kind of ties into your good thing.
I love Anson. So Anson Mount plays basically the Gene slash there's definitely some Ray Bradbury in there too.
He's like a major pastiche of a lot of different 60s sci-fi. I saw some Asimov in there. There's a lot of those guys.
There's that character in, I forget if it's season 2 or season 3 of Fargo. You know who I'm talking about?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Like the same sort of thing, the 60s science fiction guy who's like, we're making real art here, and like the studio fucked me.
But that's also the story of Gene. Like, they kicked him upstairs and took away control of his own show.
Yes, 100%. But like, he's a weird fussy, like he's touching his belly all the time, and just like, there's something.
He's got a real weird voice.
A real weird voice that I love.
You can see the handsome man under the ugly makeup and costume, but he's still doing a good job.
I loved it. I thought it was so fucking good, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
A lot of these guys do a really good fucking job as their 60s characters, but this one, I loved this.
Well, nobody else, I mean, apart from the Shatner, like, was directly based on someone. They were pastiches or similar. Yeah. Like there's a Lucille Ball analog that Number One plays, but she's not much like Lucille Ball.
No.
Also, there's this, I know we've talked about this. Kevin Church brings this up from time to time. Lucille Ball is held as this like savior of Star Trek. And like, when you talk about women in science fiction, they always bring her up. She was a producer of many television shows.
Yes.
And she didn't particularly champion this one over any other. Mm. Like, this was a money-making thing for her. She wasn't like, yes, Star Trek is important and we must preserve it. Like, you want to talk about great women in Star Trek, you talk about DC Fontana or somebody.
Yep,
like,
yep.
But Lucille Ball, like, yes, she did produce the show, designated produced the show, but they produced a lot of shows. Like, so I just
Now, she was the one that fought to have it come back for the second season, though. Like,
yeah, but that wasn't because of its social relevance. Like,
sure.
The myth around her has really been distorted so that she's this champion of the show, when really, it was a business decision. That's all.
Yeah. I mean, look, this is the thing that comes up a lot. Like, I love fucking Star Trek, but, you know, like, the show was made to make money. Like,
yeah, it was a network television show.
Yeah.
But, and again, I'm not trying to diminish that she had, like, I'm not trying to say she didn't have some role in it. She did.
Yeah.
But she's really held up as, like, after Gene Roddenberry, the most important person to the show in this era. And, like, that's simply not true. That said, I loved the character Number One was playing.
Oh, God, so much fun, too. Just like.
Also, Chapel was playing basically a Majel sort of analog. Like,
that, she's the model that, like,
hooks up with the boss.
Like, she's fucking Gene, but she's also fucking this other guy, and like.
Yeah. And she does an Australian accent. I was like, that's a good accent. That's Jess Bush, the Chapel's performer's actual accent. She's Australian.
No kidding.
So like, she's not putting on a voice. That's just what she sounds like. So.
Oh, she's so good. I love her.
Yep. Fucking Mbenga done up to look like fucking Jimi Hendrix.
Jimi Hendrix. Holy shit.
With the big afro and the headband and the kind of psychedelic clothes, like, looking great.
He's British. He's playing British.
Yeah, he's,
or is British. I don't know.
I think because he speaks such heavily accented English, I didn't think his accent was particularly good, but like, that's okay. He was trying something. The thing is,
go ahead. No.
Oh, I was going to say, this is actually my good thing.
Mm.
I actually liked La'an was playing the detective and did a horrible American accent. And you know me, I will always complain about a British person doing a bad American accent. But in this case, this is La'an Noonien Singh, famously a person who struggles to enjoy like traditionally amusing things, trying to get into the spirit of a thing. And she wouldn't do a good accent because she's not like an actor. Like the character isn't. So in the world of the show, I buy that she has a bad American accent and didn't bother me. But
yeah, I love it.
My bigger good thing is I didn't love the meta aspect of it. I didn't like all the Star Trek stuff in it. It was too on the nose. But the actual 60s era detective setting, I did love.
Yes.
She was having a good time. It was a fun holodeck adventure in the spirit of every character playing a detective or spy. Like, it worked.
That's basically when I went going into this episode, and with the title of this episode, I legit thought this was just going to be a take on the original series. I thought the whole thing was going to be like that, and I was so prepared to be exhausted. The fact that it is based around like a Hollywood detective story, like based around a Star Trek like show, makes it so much more fun.
Yes, I think like I wish they hadn't done such on the nose Star Trek. Like, and there was some like that sort of mean spirited, like, oh, isn't this show cheap and heavy handed? And like, you're Star Trek. What are you talking about?
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, it was, but that's not for you to say. You should be here telling us how great it was.
Yeah.
And yeah, it got a little, and then at the end they're doing like the outtakes, the famous outtakes, like people banging into the door like they always used to and like that kind of thing. And they did the fucking Riker leg up joke and like,
oh God, if I never see another fucking Riker leg up joke in an episode of Star Trek, it'll be too soon.
Do you remember when we first started covering Next Gen on this show and you were so excited to make this observation you had? You remember how Riker put his leg up weird? I'm going to talk about that. And like, I agree with you. Like at the time, I couldn't remember. And not that we invented that, but like, what I'm saying,
I mean, the fact that it's in the public the conscious means a lot of people have noticed that, you know,
of course. But the 15 years ago, it wasn't a thing everyone said all the time, and it felt like something we could, you know, we could make jokes about this without feeling like we're doing this tired cliche. And now it's like, ugh.
Well, they made that joke in, let me check my notes here, every episode of Lower Decks. Every episode.
Including the Lower Decks crossover with this, where he swings his leg over and he goes, Riker!
I forgot about that.
He did it to make Frakes, the director, laugh, which I actually like that as an outtake, but in the show it's stupid. Like I love the idea of what's his name that plays Boimler like just trying to crack Frakes up. That's fine. That's
cute.
That doesn't bother me, but it just doesn't make sense in world. That's all. I would have liked if they maybe, I don't know, now that I think about this, I'm not sure, they could have done some interesting connecting this to Benny Russell.
Oh, that would have been interesting.
And if you don't want to sort of diminish the impact, because that was a pretty heavy thing. You don't want to like lighten that too much. And I would appreciate if they didn't want to do that. But you had the peripheral characters in that. You had like the Na Visitor playing DC Fontana or whatever. And you had like, you know, all those people. Like you could have name checked a couple of those maybe, like just a sort of a connective world building thing. But whatever. But yeah, I didn't like the actual production, but I did like setting it behind the scenes. That was
good. Also, I do this every week because every week it's true, but good God, the costuming in this was so fucking, like, just everyone is gorgeous.
I mean, the late 60s is a very good era for costuming in general, like fashion.
Yeah.
And they all take to it very much so.
God damn. This is the stuff where I watch and it's just like, it can't have been like this every day. Like, just everyday people don't look this cool.
Well, everyday people, no, but like famous people or like people successful enough to buy good clothes and stuff.
Yeah. Like Uhura shows up and once again, I'm just like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah. So she's like an agent.
Yes.
And she's done up very professionally, but still a little sexy. Like she's wearing like nice business attire, but also showing some cleavage, and she's got glasses and she's.
The glasses on that woman. Good gravy.
Mm-hmm. Looking good. And then, weirdly, Ortegas not looking good.
Oh, I liked her deal. Like it was
me
definitely
too, but it was
different.
Not the most attractive look for her is what I'm saying.
Sure.
Like, she really takes to the sort of vaguely non-binary, like, short hair, vaguely androgynous, but still femmy a bit. Like, yeah. Like, that. Whereas the, I don't know, the big puffy 60s hair didn't really work for me. I thought La'an gave me strong Stephanie Beatrice vibes.
Oh, yeah. I could absolutely see that, yeah.
As the detective?
Oh, what a hat.
So you said you didn't see the Spock thing coming. I will not try to take full credit, but I definitely clocked that he was a hologram immediately.
That's interesting. That I did not read that until the episode was, and I saw your note and I was just like, oh, he caught it. That's cool.
I didn't catch. I would not have put together that he was the murderer. That was still a surprise to me. But
yeah.
She steps on the holodeck and immediately he's already standing there, and it's like,
yeah,
it's possible real Spock was in there checking it out, but. It seems more likely that if you enter the holodeck already in progress and there's someone there, they're probably a hologram.
Yeah.
I liked the idea. Like, normally it's a bit contrived for me that everyone on the holodeck is based on the crew. And like, I get it from a production standpoint. You want to use the actors you have. You want to let them have fun and play someone different. But it never really made sense to me. Like, why would you put your boss in your video game?
That's a weird thing to do.
But it's early days, and what Scotty says is we don't have high-resolution scans of anyone else but the senior crew. Like, that's these are the only people that we can insert here because we can't just make up people if we don't have high-res images of them, and that makes sense.
I was thinking about that, though. How weird would it be if you, like, you're doing this murder mystery, you go upstairs, and the corpse is, like, a guy you work with massive fucking, like, cuts in his neck?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, that's a weird one to deal with when I'm doing my fun, wacky adventure make-em-ups.
The thing is, even like in Next Gen, when they stepped onto the holodeck and they saw fucking Barclay's ridiculous versions of everyone, like, I would have a very hard time going back to work with people and not seeing that version of them.
Yeah.
Like, seeing Geordi is like the, what was he, like an, he was like an idiot, right? Like,
yes. Well, the one I always go back to is Wesley, who was in the corner eating pie.
That's who I was thinking of.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Like, I don't like Wesley anyway, but.
No.
It would be impossible to take him remotely seriously after that.
I'm sorry. I was just thinking about that time you were in tights eating, like, literally Georgie Porgying a pie.
I didn't do that.
Didn't you, though? I have footage.
I saw you doing it.
This is the other thing. I mentioned this in my summary briefly, but like, this is a thing I absolutely was thinking about this episode that has never come up before with a holodeck episode. What's and that is, boy, this sure reminds me of what generative AI is doing right now.
Mm-hmm.
Literally, take all of the books that this person has written and then make me a scenario like that based for me personally. It's just like, oh.
Yeah, I never really loved that idea, to be honest with you, but especially now.
Yeah.
I liked when Bashir would play holosuite programs specifically programmed by a named guy. Like,
yeah, he had a friend.
Still, yeah.
That did it.
But that gave us a window into, like, oh, there are authors out there. There are people out there making these things that aren't just pastiches of other things. They're making them themselves. And like, that's the way you do it.
That's cool. And it, like, fucking, even like Quark did them. They were shitty and cheap, but like,
yeah, no, he
yeah, wrote you a holodeck program.
He wouldn't buy from the top tier guys, but presumably there's like game developers for the holodeck. Like,
oh yeah.
Just people who that's their job. And like,
well, that's like the Doctor's Holo novel, you know, like,
yeah.
It's the same sort of thing. You just sort of play through it.
Mm-hmm. Let's get into your bad thing. You talked about this a little in your summary. But
so, giving a speech about how important Star Trek is to Uhura on an actual Star Trek show feels so goddamn fucking masturbatory. Like, I too believe that Star Trek is important. It's a great way to show a better future that's worth dreaming of and achieving. And when I say it, it's fine, because despite my best efforts, I am not Star Trek.
No, we are people commenting about Star Trek as outsiders.
You can't just have Uhura come in and go, as one of the characters on Star Trek who is very important, I need to tell you how important Star Trek is.
Yeah, no, it's bad.
Mal poked her head in when I was watching this episode and went, holy shit, was this written by Gene's kid? And yeah, it certainly feels that way.
Well, the speech itself, I was braced for it because you got into the document first and I saw your bad thing. Like, okay, I'm ready for this. And I still wasn't ready for it. But it was very much like that Shatner impression where it felt like it was written by someone who didn't even know firsthand what it was. They were sort of parroting all the things people have said about Star Trek over the years without actually having firsthand knowledge. And it's like, yes, I get it. It talks about important issues and you're contextualizing it in science fiction. But like, there's no real understanding of it there at all.
Yeah. It's just, it's, I get wanting to do the show on the show, but like, this is what, this feels like something that you as Star Trek just can't do, you know? Like,
well, also put aside our feelings for it. This is what Lower Decks was for. Lower Decks did all the meta stuff.
Like, yes.
You could do a little of that, but it's too similar to something you just did.
Yeah.
Like, you had a whole show to do this kind of thing.
Like, the thing I kept thinking about was, like, it's fine to address the grander idea of science fiction as a,
Well, Far Beyond the Stars did that.
Far Beyond the Stars, but also, like, the Bride of Chaotic episode of Voyager, like,
yeah, that was more pulpy stuff, but yeah,
exactly. Yeah. But like, that's commenting on science fiction through science fiction without getting this close to the source material, you know, like there's a distance there.
I'm like, Far Beyond the Stars is one of the only examples I can think of in the positive column. I generally don't like when media tells us how important that particular medium is. When comics talk about how great comics are, or when
it's a hard line to walk too, you know.
And it's almost never done well. And here, it's absolutely not done well.
But no, I'm like, look, I get Star Trek too, but you're making me feel bad about it.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe I'll get really into Lost in Space. How about that?
Danger, danger. There were some good one-liners in this, I thought. There's like the Spock this was Scotty, I think, going through what's popular on this holodeck thing. Well, violence and relaxation seem to be popular, which I love that.
Yeah.
At one point, as the detective, Laon, pulls out a cigarette and he says, it would be unwise to smoke in the confines of the holodeck. Or at all.
Or at all.
Which I thought was good. Yes.
The character Uhura is playing can't get a light, which is really funny to me, too.
Well, I imagine creating that fake smoke is like a whole, like, subroutine this thing's already draining the whole ship, and Scotty's just frantically running about with it, you know, trying to keep it together. And
Don't smoke it. There's literally nowhere for it to go.
Yep. It's got to create tobacco smoke, which hasn't existed for quite some time. So back in Star Trek VI, Spock has the line, an ancestor of mine said, when you eliminate the impossible, blah, 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 blah. Which for years people interpreted to mean, is Spock related to Sherlock Holmes?
Yep.
And this definitively said that he is actually related to Conan Doyle, which was one of those unnecessary Enterprise explanations, but I guess they settled those arguments. So whatever.
Yeah. I, one, didn't need to hear that, and two, thought it was better when I thought his ancestor was Sherlock Holmes.
And then Data's playing a real guy, not a series of stories. Yeah.
I don't know, this is fictional, so can that, like, fucking who cares?
Yeah, exactly. There was a line in a QI episode, I think Joe Brand said this, if you go back far enough, everyone's related to a fictional character. And what?
Yep.
That is not what she meant, but that's what she said.
Yep.
And I've been thinking about that ever since. Ugh. Just in our ancestry, we're all related to Winnie the Pooh.
Yep. Oh, bother. That does explain my need for a smackerel of honey, though.
It does. It absolutely does.
And my fear of heffalumps and woozles.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, you know, I really liked the Winnie the Pooh books as a kid, so.
Well, Canadian treasure A.A. Milne.
Yep.
Let's see, what else?
What else?
I wanna say this somewhat delicately. There was a series of shots where La'an's nipples are poking through her shirt. That wasn't delicate at all.
No.
But they had her in a white shirt, and it was just like, you can't, when you shoot this, and maybe you didn't spot it, you can't digitally sort of fix that. That's just a little undignified for her. Like, you know, like, I was not made uncomfortable, but I can't imagine she was cool with it, is all I'm saying.
Again, that good God, that costume, her hair,
mm-hmm.
good gravy.
Yep. Very good gravy. What else? So, we have not talked about this yet. Sort of the bookend. So in the wedding episode, Spock is learning how to dance from La'an, who,
yes,
this is one of those, the performer is a good dancer, so we're going to use this. And she's like particularly tangoing, which is very sexy. She does the big leg wrap, like, and the really elaborate, like, dips and all that stuff. And they kiss at the end of that.
Yeah.
I'm like, are they getting involved now?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going back and forth on this. I guess I don't mind, but
I'm pretty okay with this, honestly. Like, even if it's just, like, Spock doing, like, a rebound thing from Chapel, like...
Who herself was a rebound from T'Pring.
Yep.
I always, and this is me being a nitpicky fucking fan, but like, I always come back to, in 5 to 10 years, they're going to discover Khan, Noonien, and Singh, and he's going to say, I've never heard this name in my life.
Yeah.
Which,
in that case, it was, I don't want to talk about my bad breakup with La'an, Captain, to the detriment of the entire crew.
Kirk, who also almost dated her.
Yep.
Like, she said, let's date, and he said, I'm actually with, Dr.
Carol.
What's her? Carol, thank you.
Yeah.
But, like, I'd be interested otherwise. Like, they both know her, for Christ's sake.
I'm still waiting for Bones to show up at the end of the series, and she's just like, say.
Mm-hmm. Just gonna make her way around the whole Trinity?
Yep.
I'm not
having sex with Chekhov. I'm just, it's not happening.
Well, thankfully, I don't think you two overlap. I think he shows up by the time you're gone, so.
Who's this, Sulu? No, thank you.
No, not interested.
I'm good, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you want to go trip balls.
Mm-hmm. I'll be down in the botany lab.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I do
the
right now.
The botany lab. Oh, no.
Botany Bay. What else? I don't know that I have a lot more.
Yeah, I don't. I'm looking at my notes. So La'an has that moment where she's like talking about the detective novel she read as a kid. And my first thought was, oh, La'an's a Nancy Drew fan. Mm-hmm. And then she comes out in that thing. I'm like, I was thinking of a different reference. Never mind.
Well, you're thinking of a child, and she's most decidedly not a child.
No.
That said, there was a CW or similar version of Nancy Drew from some years ago that Tilo described as Nancy Drew fucks.
Yeah, yeah.
They gave her the Riverdale treatment. So, like, maybe she liked that version. I don't know.
I mean, honestly, you know, there's legs on that gym mat. I could see that working.
There's legs on that gym mat.
Mm-hmm.
This becomes less English with every iteration.
I mean, honestly, like, I'm pretty fine with that.
Yeah, that's fine.
If I could reach a point in my life where Gen Z has no idea what I'm talking about.
Yeah, look, old people need, like, their own secret code, too.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else?
I think that's it.
All right, well, you got a quote.
Oh, yeah. This is from the very beginning of the episode. I fully laughed at this. This is Chapel's character.
The Agonians have put us in an impossible situation. There is only one solution.
We can't give them our brain cells. We need it for many science reasons.
Yeah, that was okay. I was so irritated by all of that that I... Like, I know there were some good lines in there, but I refuse to let myself laugh at them. Which
sure.
is probably not fair, but also, I don't know. It, like, again, I've seen so many better versions of what they were trying to do, and who should be better at this than Star Trek?
Yep.
But whatever, man.
All that being said, the second Chapel comes on in that fucking beehive and miniskirt. I'm just like, oh, no.
Well, look, hello. The costumes were great.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Ortegas comes in with the shittiest fucking ray gun ass laser I've ever seen. I loved it.
Mm-hmm. And the fucking view screen bug eyed monster thing was, yep, was okay. Like the mm-hmm. visuals of it were all right.
Yeah. I love the there's a real trippy fucking like thing in the background. Like mm-hmm. in the way they used to do the they've replicated them on Strange New Worlds. The like the just the background things that sort of make weird like
Like the Spockoscope with its spiral, yes, like Twilight Zone vision. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, I don't know what this does, but fucking it looks cool as shit.
And there's some stagehand back there just twirling that to make it go. All right. Well, I think that's all we got.
Yeah.
I enjoyed this more than I expected to from the first 5 minutes. I'll say that.
Mm-hmm.
But I Oh, go ahead.
So far, season three not been as bad as I was led to believe, which is kind of nice.
No, but it's every bit as wacky as I was led to
that
believe.
That is true.
We got Trelane in this already, and we're only mm-hmm. on, this is only like, what, episode three?
And the zombie
something?
One, I forgot about that.
On the zombie, yeah. They've all been, yeah. Well, I wouldn't call that one a wacky one, but it was kind of tedious.
I mean, if you described to me, like, we're doing a zombie episode, like, you know,
yeah.
I liked that episode, but like, despite the zombie stuff, you know?
Yeah, exactly. There was, I said this at the time, there was enough going on there. We didn't need that.
Yeah.
But anyway, I know there's more wackiness to come. I've seen a couple of screenshots. I don't know much of anything, but.
Yeah, the only one I know coming is the Vulcan one. I'd know very little yeah. about it, but I know it's coming. Well,
I've seen screenshots of Patton Oswalt as a Vulcan, and it makes me sad.
Yeah.
But next week, we have an episode called Through the Lens of Time. I have no idea what that is, but.
Well, I assume we'll be going through a lens of time of some kind, Al.
Maybe. This was not even a space adventure hour. As you point out, it was a space adventure 47 minutes.
Yeah.
So. You know, the titles aren't always a literal.
Yeah, that's with fucking that little credits. Starfleet thing at the beginning, and you know.
Yeah, and like previously. All right, so that's all for this time. The website is postatomichorror.com. If you want to write to us, it is postatomichorror@gmail. Thank you to our kind patrons, and if you want to be one of them, it is patreon.com/algar. Mm-hmm. As little as a buck a month, you get all that.
Gets you access
stuff.
To a ton of material.
Yes. And I think that's all for this time.
Yeah. See you, folks.
The Postatomic Horror Podcast is a co-production of Maggie Robotham and Ron Algar Watt. Copyright 2026. Please don't sue us. We're just doing this for fun.